Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This hour is brought to you by Busey Bank.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The score.
And 670thescore.com. In Odyssey Station.
Dosunmu to the rim. Dosunmu with a left-handed layup. He would not be denied going to the rack.
Yeah, you know, of course, me being drafted in the second round, every night, you know, I have to play with a chip on my shoulder just to prove that where I thought I should have belonged. But, you know, that's all in the past. I try to go out there and compete on defensive end and do the little things. So that's what I try to do today.
That's one of the steals of last year's draft, Ayo Dosunmu. You heard the Bulls call on your home for Bulls basketball, Sports Radio 670 The Score. Chuck Swirsky and Bill Weddington. And here to tell us what the Bulls may do at another important juncture for this team is young Rob. He is Rob Schaefer on Twitter, at Rob_Schaefer. He of NBC Sports Chicago is with us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Rob, what's happening, man?
Not much, Dan. Gearing up, big week for the Bulls, and obviously all of the NBA this week, and then we'll get really rolling with the offseason. So, fun time to be locked in.
Rob, we came in talking about Ayo Dosunmu. I'd love to know what of the Bulls said was the success of their scouting and drafting of Ayo Dosunmu. What victory did they get in doing that and finding that player?
Yeah, I think the story of Ayo, at least so far, Lawrence, the success of him, it's kind of that cliche you hear about drafting the person as well as the player. Like, if you get a guy in your building who has a certain set of skills, and you hear about them all the time in draft season, you know, the measurables, the length, wingspan, height, positional size, et cetera, a guy that can play or defend multiple positions, all of those different things look great on paper. But when you're actually talking about developing somebody, you want someone probably that has a track record of improvement in the past and that you could reasonably project is going to be a nose to the grindstone type person and continue to, you know, chart that improvement in the future. Because at the end of the day, nobody comes into the NBA in the draft context, you know, a finished product. And I think Ayo was a perfect example of a guy who was a certain type of player in college, came into the NBA, recognized that he was probably going to have to, you know, play a little bit different of a role in the NBA. He really got on the floor with his defense early in the season, improved dramatically as a shooter and a playmaker, having to, you know, shoulder some starting point guard responsibilities throughout the year. And I think what that speaks to is, yeah, you had somebody who has good size for a combo guard, long, tenacious defensively, has these innate gifts. But because he came in, you know, with a humble approach, with a growth mindset, you know, was extremely coachable, took instruction well, he developed into what he is, and that also makes you feel good, you know, no matter how old he is, no matter how much time he spent in college, about him, you know, continuing to be that player and more for the Bulls in the future. So I think, you know, when you look at what they could do at 18 this year, there's no, I don't think, science to, okay, they can apply exactly this that they, you know, saw in Ayo and just project it to the 18th pick and they'll get an instant role player from day one. But I think what we're learning over time is that drafting the person and getting to know, you know, someone's character can be just as important as, you know, the skill traits that they have when you talk about drafting and developing an NBA player.
The bonus that they got from Ayo's accelerated development almost obscures the truth of Arturas Karnišovas and Mark Eversley, and that is their belief in development over time. Not everybody's going to be Io, you know. So when you look at what Toronto did and does, when you look at what Denver did and does, I've got to go back and listen to what I said when they put this front office together and remember that they look at this differently. They look at draft capital differently, maybe more of a baseball mentality or a hockey mentality when it comes to some of this. And how does that inform the 18th pick because of where they are? Does it, when we say, oh, they got to get a contributor on a rookie scale deal who can step right in and be part of a rotation, or do they not care about that in a good way? Do they say, look, we're just going to amass talent, and when this player's ready, this player will be ready, and it isn't necessarily part of trying to win a playoff series next year?
Yeah, it's an interesting point you raised there, Dan, and I think it speaks to how difficult this front office has been to kind of pin down, because like you said, AK specifically comes from Denver, where I think the mantra down there with the team that they've built, we obviously didn't get to see it healthy last year, but we will to a degree this year, had been draft Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, Michael Porter Jr., Monty Morris. Like, draft, develop those guys, and then retain them. Like, they compensate their guys and they bring them back. And the front, you know, AK specifically, when they came in here, Billy, you know, in his first comments, I remember him well, a lot of the onus for this Bulls team was on player development. You know, we figured it would be a build through the draft type of mentality because the Bulls were in a rebuilding state at that time. And again, like you said, that was the track record. And it's, you know, ever since the trade deadline when they traded for Nikola Vucevic, it's been a very aggressive kind of work the trade market, work the sign-in trade market, the free agent market to try to improve immediately as much as possible, you know, future draft capital aside. Like, they've invested a lot of future draft capital into kind of immediate upgrades. But I think when you look at, you know, say they make this pick on Thursday, whether it be the 18th pick, whether they trade up, whether they trade back, whatever, I still think the core philosophy of this front office is something that AK said before his first draft when he drafted Patrick Williams, a pick that surprised a lot of people. It's this best player available, and I think within that, it's kind of not factoring in roster fit as much as upside, as much as talent, as much as character, as much as, you know, you can never draft, whether you're drafting fourth overall or 18th overall or 30th overall. I think it's kind of a fool's errand a lot of times to draft for fit because your roster, especially in the NBA in this day and age, can look so different one year to the next. They might, you know, as they did with Io last year, they might, you know, and I don't mean this in any derogatory way, but they might stumble into an instant contributor. But I think the enduring philosophy of this front office is best player available, roster fit, you know, be damned to a degree. The kind of flip side of that, or the bright side of that, I guess you could say, is that this Bulls team, especially in the depth department, has so many holes to plug that I don't think there's a player that they could take at 18. If they think that person is going to be a really good player, I don't think there's a player type they could take that wouldn't help them, especially from a depth perspective.
All right, where do Tyler Cook and Marko Simanović fit in this picture? Simanović, and those of us who actually did watch all the video available, scouting videos of him, he remains intriguing and clearly wasn't ready to play in the NBA, but they wanted him on that roster. And Cook has an NBA body, and though he was undrafted, they clearly see some moldable raw materials there too. Do both remain prospects, and where is the arrow pointed?
Well, Marco, you know, is under contract for the next two seasons, you know, barring a trade where he would be, you know, a filler of some kind. I would expect him to be on the team next year. Now, with Marco, it's a question of, and hopefully we'll see him in summer league. You know, it'll be a question of how much is he able to kind of build himself out strength-wise throughout the offseason, because, you know, he never really got in for non-garbage time minutes this year. But I think you could reasonably say that from a physically, he just wasn't, you know, ready to match up with NBA frontcourt players at that point in his career. The jump shot, I watched a lot of his tape from the Adriatic League. The jump shot looked like a real weapon for him over there. It didn't necessarily translate to the expanded three-point line, at least not right away. So he'll be an interesting case, but I mean, I would expect Marco to be around. I don't, until we see what this offseason yields for him, though, I don't necessarily feel comfortable projecting a rotation role for him next year necessarily, just because of how far off he was last year. And then Cook, I mean, he was on a two-way deal last year. That's something that they'll have to figure out if they want to bring him back, whether that be on a deal with, you know, the actual team or maybe the Windy City Bulls again. I'm one of the few, and I think I remember talking to you about this, Dana, you know, back during that right after that first Bucks matchup, when he guarded Giannis for a lot of that game and actually fared pretty well. I might be one of the few Tyler Cook fans out there. Not that people dislike Tyler Cook, but just I don't think he's talked about very much.
No, I brought him up for a reason.
Yeah, but I think he's interesting, especially when you talk about this team's need in the front court, need for physicality, need for kind of an interior thrust. I'm interested in Tyler Cook. Now, the question is, you know, those two-way deals don't translate year over year, so they would have had to see enough of him last year to, you know, potentially bring him back in a more expanded deal. I think that's something we'll get answered in the next few weeks, you know, once free agency plays out and we get a little deeper into the summer.
With you guys on the Bulls Talk podcast, Rob, I know that you're saying that the Bulls is an organization, like they're not looking necessarily for need or for fit, but when you guys are breaking it all down, what's the list of needs and is there a hierarchy to what you think the Bulls' needs are this offseason?
Yeah, I think number one there, I'd put size, and I'd put front court size. And ideally, you know, again, I'm going to end up listing a lot of things that every NBA team is looking for and then that are hard to find. But front court size and front court versatility, I think, would be high up on my list. And that's why me, as someone who, you know, is not a professional scout by any means or an NBA front office member, I look at some of these draft prospects, and my mind does immediately go to fit. I look at a guy like E.J. Liddell, who, you know, is 6'7", 240, can potentially play the four or the five at the NBA level, protect the rim and switch out onto the perimeter. And I think he's the type of guy that looks like an interesting fit in the mold of a, you know, just NBA names that people recognize in the mold of a PJ Tucker or a Grant Williams who made a name for himself in these playoffs. Like, I think a player like that gives you a little bit more heft on the interior and also allows you to play multiple different ways. Because as much as depth was an issue for this Bulls team last year, there also was a stylistic inflexibility to them that I think in some ways comes with a team that's going to be anchored by Nikola Vucevic and without much of a backup center option, or at least a viable one, for most of the year. So I think that would be very, very high up on my list. Now, again, you know, whether that gets addressed in the draft or for agency remains to be seen. But I think they need to add, you know, a couple viable bodies in the front court from a size, rim protection, rebounding perspective. In the offseason. And then a little bit lower down, I mean, the wing is going to need to be restaffed if you don't have a guy like Troy Brown Jr. or Derrick Jones back next season. Those guys weren't rotation mainstays by any means, but they were, you know, bodies in the wing rotation. I think they'll need some viable options behind DeMar DeRozan, Zach LaVine. Preferably you'd want kind of bigger wing bodies. Again, size. This team played small so much last year, and when they were healthy, it worked with Alex Caruso and Lonzo Ball, but you know, I think if last season taught us anything, it's that they need to be a little bit more, you know, flexible to weather adversity in the injury department or availability department. And then from every position, shooting. Just didn't get up enough threes last year when Lonzo went down. The percentage cratered. And I think, you know, if you watched that five-game Bucks series, the inability to hit open threes when they were conceded by that Milwaukee defense is really part of what sunk them in a major way and led to a couple pretty bad blowout losses. And I think you could even say that was a big factor down the stretch of the regular season when they kind of faded too. So size in the front court and on the wing, shooting. And I think if you can add that in rotation spots 5 through 9, they could be in a much better position next season.
Speaking of Lonzo Ball, I ask everyone who covers this Bulls team this question. How worried are you about Lonzo Ball?
Hard to put an exact number or kind of assertion on it. But I would say I'm watching next season closely, and that'll be kind of my big determiner of, you know, how much of a concern long-term this is going to be. Cause you're dealing with somebody who obviously has now a history of multiple operations in that same knee that he got worked on this year. He's also somebody that's dealt with, you know, the bone bruise is really the thing that exacerbated, you know, that knee injury post-op last year. He's had a history of those too. I mean, a sprained ankle in his second season with the Lakers kind of was exacerbated by a bone bruise and ended up turning, similar to the Bulls, a 6 to 8 week timeline into a season ending injury. So I'd be concerned about that too. As well as the fact that, you know, he's not a guy that has a track record of playing more than 60 games in a regular season, in his 5 years. I'm fairly concerned, but you know, as AK said at his end of season presser, as kind of has been the messaging from the organization, I think they're just trying to be optimistic with it and let next season be kind of a decider of that, or just get more information on it if he can spend a full offseason and get healthy. But I think you'd be a fool to not be a little bit concerned about it. Still a young player, so you hope that maybe he can find some resiliency over time. But it's certainly one of the biggest kind of looming questions over the Bulls going into next year.
Is Patrick Williams going to play summer league?
That is a good question. We have not really gotten much of an update on that. Patrick sounded open-minded to it the last time we talked to him. I would lean no, only because, you know, or at least that would be my guess, my speculative guess, only because last summer league, he played three games. He kind of showed what he needed to show and got out of there. And, you know, there's an injury risk to it, you know, going into his third season. Now, it would be only his second summer league. I don't see it as something that is necessary for Patrick Williams going into his third year, necessarily as important as the third year as it will be for him. But I do expect Io to play. You know, I would expect a first round pick, provided there is one, to play. Maybe some undrafted free agent guys that'll be worth a look. Marco, I think, could benefit for it for some of the reasons we talked about earlier. Patrick, I wouldn't necessarily be counting on, but I wouldn't rule it completely out either. I just would lean no as of right now.
I can't get it out of my head how significant this year is for him, and where the Bulls overall as a team, their improvement is if they stick with this core, and if AK does what he says he's going to do, and that is build around the margins of this core one way or the other, and there's no blockbuster trades. That's where the Bulls' improvement is in his improvement. That's really it. If he takes, however you want to define it, whatever cliche you want to use of an incremental step or a next level, raising his floor, whatever it is, that's, you're a better team. You are more likely to win that playoff series. You are going to get closer to the Eastern Conference Finals if he is good. And it's almost as simple as that if the other pieces come back how they are and they have relative good health.
Yeah, and perhaps there would be some benefit to, you know, as he did last summer, just kind of try out things that he's worked on skill development-wise, you know, in a professional environment, or at least something close to a professional environment, not fully, obviously, you know, in a summer league context. At the same time, two or three games there, I would think that the, you know, surrounding work of his offseason, building strength, building endurance, kind of all the mental stuff, building on the film study aspects of his game that he said that he, you know, improved upon when he was injured last season. I would think that that's a little bit more important, but, you know, we'll see what happens. It certainly would add intrigue to summer league. I don't know. He was so good in his stint last year. I just don't know what else he could show. But if he sees it as you know, useful for his own personal development, I could see it happening.
Rob, what type of coverage is NBC Sports Chicago planning for the draft?
Yeah, we'll be loaded up all week. We've got a bunch of prospect profiles. My colleague Casey Johnson and I up on the site now. We've got a mock draft up. You know, going up into draft night, we'll obviously have instant reactions. We'll have a podcast to the pick or whatever the Bulls do on draft night. And it'll be good to hear from the brain trust again. And, you know, maybe the next person to walk in the door on this roster, just kind of on the direction of the team. And then that obviously flows straight into free agency, which will be an interesting time as well. So yeah, TV, podcast, website, we'll be all over that on NBC Sports Chicago.
Outstanding. Rob Schaefer, thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, guys.
I like Rob. Rob's a real dude, man. When he first got to NBC Sports Chicago, I was still working there. I mean, I guess technically I'm back working there, but I got to meet him. Like, man, this dude is, we got two guys in this city that I think are similar in the way that they approach it. I think Rob and Cody are similar in the way that they approach covering the Bulls. And I love it. I love how granular both of those dudes are.
Yeah. They both take a scholarly approach,
mm-hmm.
which I obviously enjoy. There's an intellectualism to it that I think befits some of the best NBA coverage that's going on right now.
Do we have time? I want to follow up on something you asked Rob about when it came to Patrick Williams, because I think it's important.
Let's do that when we come back and also have fun with an NBA championship celebration.
And Hennessy.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Bernstein and Holmes. Middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
And that'll do it. It's over. The Golden State Warriors return to a familiar place. They're on top of the NBA world.
Hey! Every so once in a while, you got to remind yourself.
You got to remind
yourself. You got
to fall. Dude, we win. Winners win. They'll never understand it. They'll try to quantify it. They'll try to make it about points. Winners win. That's what we do. Shut up. That's what I said. Hey, I said it. Shut up.
I didn't know that little finals MVP made you good now. Apparently that makes you good.
No, I'm not good yet because I got to go play for Coach Kerr in 24.
I'm just going to continue to destroy people on Twitter as I have been. I just want to say thank you all. And as always, everybody else. I love y'all.
The Petty Kings. The Golden State Warriors are the Petty Kings. They remember everything. And their celebration yesterday was phenomenal.
Hold that.
Hold that is what Clay said to Jaren Jackson. Because he had said something and made fun of the strength in numbers motto that they use.
I can't wait. There was this one player on the Grizzlies who tweeted strength in numbers after they beat us in the regular season, and it pissed me off so much. I can't wait to retweet that thing. Freaking bum. That I had to watch that. I'm just like, this freaking clown.
It's so
okay.
Good.
Okay. Okay. Sorry.
And then you see Clay stumbling all over the place and absolutely blindsided some poor woman, got her right in the shoulder and knocked her down because he was losing his balance on like a grate, and then he hit her and oh, sorry. And
he picked her up.
Picked her right
he
up.
At least he didn't pull a Matthew Stafford and act like nothing happened.
Oh, hey, you just fell off the stage.
I'm going to go over here.
Man, go ahead. And it's one thing to do it on the parquet floor in Boston, because that's got to feel
amazing,
just the best. It's sort of like when we were talking in transition yesterday when I was talking with Spiegel about what it was like to have that sort of vampiric feeling, that sucking the lifeblood out of something and just watching it turn white and pale and die. That's what it's got to feel like watching those Boston fans.
I'm sure
watch it, you celebrate.
I'm sure it felt great, and they clearly are driven by some of these narratives. Steph didn't like that he was somehow not included in the greatest that have ever done it because he didn't have a finals MVP. And now he's got one. And he celebrated that. And he celebrated that on the floor with his dad. And he celebrated it and talked about it. That's the one thing that I love about the NBA that I kind of wish would filter into the other sports. At the end of this stuff, what ends up happening? The Rams win the Super Bowl. Oh, man, you know, it's just so great. And we're so happy for Aaron Donald. And no, you want Matthew Stafford in that moment to be like, see, I told y'all. Y'all know what was holding me back. I was playing in Detroit. That's what was holding me back. And now look at me. Now I got a Super Bowl.
I'm 100 years old, but I don't suck anymore. Well, that was that. That's kind of like what Steph was saying. Like, now you're good,
right?
Now you're actually a good player,
right? The Hennessy was flowing yesterday.
It's still
and good for them.
When we have these favorite moments that we remember, and we've been lucky enough to have some parades and some festive moments in our city, whether it was Jack Haley dancing and up on the stage in Grant Park, or it's Chris Versteeg with the worst freestyle rap of all time.
Just terrible.
I'm so bad. It'd be like,
and he thought it was so good.
I know, but the cringe factor on that, if you watch that again, if it's been a while since you remember the Chris Versteeg rap, and I don't want to perpetrate this on anybody. It's so bad. Like, you just want a friend or someone to walk over to him and pull him away from the microphone.
You want Sandman from the Apollo to come out there and sweep him off the stage. Get out of here, Versteeg.
But to me, Marshawn Lynch getting off of the parade bus or for a car, whatever he was riding on, walks over to the crowd because he sees somebody drinking out of a bottle of Fireball.
Fireball, yeah.
He asks for it. Not just to take a shot and hand it back. He takes the bottle.
Yeah. And that person would have been more than happy to give Marshawn Lynch the bottle. So they did all of this in the parade yesterday. Dan, I got to share this with you because I stayed with the coverage of the championship till 35, 40 minutes afterwards. There was this great moment where Draymond Green is asked what he learned about himself. Listen to his answer.
You had a lot of personal ups and downs in this series. What do you think you learned about yourself in this series?
I didn't learn anything about myself. I didn't know I was resilient. Maybe they thought otherwise, but nobody gave me this. I had to work every second of my life to get to this point. So I didn't learn much, but I'm a four-time champion with my brothers.
I didn't learn a damn thing about myself.
They learned about me.
What do you think you learned about yourself in this series?
I didn't learn anything about myself.
Asked and answered.
I love it. I was looking at the TV like just, I looked like a pet. When I just like turned my head and was like, I can't believe that he just said that. It's so great.
I didn't learn anything about myself.
Not a damn thing. I didn't learn a thing about myself, but you gonna learn that I'm a four-time champion.
That's so great. I didn't need to learn anything. We just want a chip.
No what hesitation.
What else you got? 847 texter says, how come what Golden State is saying is okay when blasting opponents, but everyone got upset when Michael roasted his competition in his Hall of Fame speech?
Come on. That's very different.
Come on. That's a bad question if you can't see the difference between those things.
And remember, Jordan bought a plane ticket and brought the guy that he beat him out for his high school team there just to dog him. Like, it's petty. And I oftentimes do believe that there is something to being a petty king. I've occasionally petty LaBelle, Richard Petty, whatever you want. But that's out of line. That's completely out of line. But doing it in the moment of after winning your championship, knowing that there were things out there that were being said, like, will we see this team be able to do this again? They did something really funny on ESPN. Elle Duncan does Taking the L as one of the segments. I think she's their best anchor, but she did this whole thing about them being petty. And there was this video of Ryan Clark saying that they weren't going to win, and Steph referenced it in the post game. So Ryan is on the video saying, yeah, I don't know, the Clinton Yates, and he threw it off on other black analysts saying that it was a mistaken identity, that it wasn't him that did it. It was really, 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 really funny. So, you know, I enjoy the petty king and all of them doing it. Well, you know, I just messed it up. It's Dominique Foxworth who said that he was Ryan Clark or Clinton Yates. Great, great content. Great stuff. Can I ask you, we're running up against the clock, but I just wanted to point out, I know that our partnership is only 2 days old, but I want to see if I got this right. Is the reason that you brought up P-Will going to the Summer League because you want to see P-Will just do his thing offensively?
I don't necessarily want him in the Summer League. I want to know what their decision about his participation or not says about A, their expectations, B, their attempts to light whatever fire he's got in him, how he's being motivated, and injury risk after everything this team went through, how concerned would they be about either wear and tear or him hurting himself in games that don't mean anything? He matters so much. And as long as they're hanging on to him, as long as they remain committed to him, he is a central storyline. Everyone's talking about Vooch and Gobert and Zach LaVine, but if the Bulls want to be better, if this iteration of this Bulls team is going to be better, it's going to be because he's significantly better. How are they going to make that happen?
The other part for me is, I know it's sacrilege to offer this up, but I think the Bulls would be better if DeMar DeRozan worked on three-point shooting.
Oh my God, yes. Just make two a game or three a game. Like yes.
So I started looking at the statistics on it, Dan. Kobe at the end of his career started shooting more threes. And I know that DeMar is, you know, a little bit of a copy of game-wise of Kobe. If Kobe was doing that and ended up shooting, I think, 30% the last couple years from three, all his game needs is the idea of you're going to space the floor.
Changes the shape of everything they
yes.
do.
Yes. And with all of the other stuff that he can do with the ball in his hands, I need 4 3-point attempts from DeMar a game. 4.
And also, those are shots on which he's not going to fall down.
Well, that's another story for another day.
Ideally. Next up, we have High Noon. I have When is a Cat Not a Cat? And then I have a dog story, and I can't believe I'm doing this, but you're not going to believe it.
I'm going to talk about the other member of the former Warriors championship team who is still out here jousting at windmills and former players. And if I have time, we'll talk about ratings for baseball.
I didn't learn anything about myself.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
I'll be back this way on Monday. We'll settle this then. Right there, out in the street, in front of the Palace Saloon.
Yeah, right. When? High noon?
Get used to it. Just about halfway through the show. 10 to 2, middays, Monday through Friday, Bernstein and Holmes. We are going to bring you High Noon. We always tell you what we did do. We had a pretty in-depth first hour of baseball, talking about White Sox and injuries and pitching and the lessons to be learned from Johnny Cueto as we saw Lance Lynn come back last night. Talked a little bit about seeing the absolute monster that O'Neill Cruz is going to be on the Pittsburgh Pirates. That's the thing, man. Apparently, he had the 3 fastest sprint speeds recorded by the Pirates this year, all within the first inning or something like that. There's some crazy vectors that he just already is the best athlete that they've seen on the field in forever. And we talked to Rob Schaefer and did some bull stuff, a little fun with the championship parade.
So, obviously, with Golden State winning a championship, there have been a lot of people that have pointed their ire towards Kevin Durant and said, see, these guys didn't need you. You needed them more than they needed you. One of those critics is a normal Kevin Durant critic, Charles Barkley. Barkley has said multiple times that KD is going to have to be the bus driver of a championship for him to get some of the respect that he clearly craves. CJ McCollum pushed back a little bit on the idea, and then Kevin Durant himself got involved in the conversation. He said about Chuck, all this blank is nasty. Another terrible analogy from a hating old head that can't accept that we make him more bread than them. It's just timing, Chucky. Don't hate the player. I tend to think this is a little bit dismissive. And there is some, you know, hit dogs holler type stuff. I think Kevin Durant is amazing. But I think that it bothers him that he wasn't able to do what he wanted to do in Brooklyn with Kyrie. My man Tony Gill brought this up a couple weeks ago. And I think it's worth exploring. And maybe the two of us at some point will talk about it. player empowerment and understanding when to use your power, how to use your power, and how to use the people inside the organization to make everyone happy and rich and championship worthy. I think that he's one of the greatest that's ever done it. I love Kevin Durant, and I love angry Kevin Durant. That's my favorite version of him. But I think that Charles Barkley has gotten under his skin and is staying under his skin.
Their hearts were in the right place when a couple in Tennessee found an adorable kitten on their porch. It had run up on their back deck, and they took it to True Rescue. It's an animal rescue organization in Tennessee, and they said this little kitten needed an emergency placement. And the rescuers looked at it immediately and said, yeah, no. It's a bobcat.
Oh,
wait. And you take one look at this kitten. I'm no biologist. I'm no feline expert. But that's not a regular cat. Like, a normal cat doesn't have paws the size of its head with talons like a velociraptor. They also said it was making, quote, funny growling noises.
Meaning it was growling.
First of all, not funny. It's probably unhappy, and that probably means going to rip your face off when it's given the opportunity. So they have taken it to a wildlife rescue organization that could handle the fact that it's a bobcat. And it's nice of you to have taken it somewhere, but you're lucky if you had that thing in your car that everybody's okay. Because they're around here, too. You'll find them occasionally here or down near the north branch of the river. They are not to be messed with.
I had some people working on some stuff at the house, and I was explaining to them, don't leave the exterior back door open, because there's critters around here.
Oh, yeah. There's coyotes.
Yes.
And skunks. And
possums. And
oh, yeah.
There's all sorts of stuff, and they're just looking for a nice place to hang out. So close my damn door. This from Sports TV Ratings. Sunday night's game between the Astros and the White Sox did a 1.084 million viewers. The College World Series, the men's College World Series, Notre Dame versus Oklahoma. Notre Dame has been kind of a fun college baseball story. 1.332 million viewers. Yeah, that look on your face is the look that I had on my face. That a college baseball game outdrew a Major League Sunday night baseball game.
Pace of play. They get it and they throw it.
They were on at the same time. White Sox on ESPN, college baseball game on ESPN2. You know, a lot of people still look at the White Sox and Astros World Series and the ratings
which,
on that.
Which some people still don't realize happened.
Yes. Whole network doesn't even. But I thought it was interesting. As
yeah, it is.
College softball starts to really rate and college softball media rights, it's going to be a thing. It's a good game. But college baseball, those games linger. Those are four-hour games. So seeing a College World Series game outdraw a regular season MLB game, it's a little eye-opening.
1 hour from now, we will begin at my home a week of dog sitting. Nobody could believe I said yes.
You hate dogs.
I don't hate dogs. I hate owning dogs. So this will be a week of essentially owning a dog.
What kind of dog?
She's a mutt. I don't know exactly. Looks like there's a little boxer in there. I haven't met the dog yet. Jason's met the dog. Her name is Maggie.
Manny Pacquiao?
And she's coming over, and we're going to have her for a week. We are going to have a dog in the house for a week.
Uh-oh!
So I'm doing this. I know the kids are very excited, and I'm that's on them. I said, you're going to have to, you know, come home and be responsible, but
Do you think that there's a chance that this opens the door for you owning a dog?
You had to ask that, right? Because I think they think so. But it's the timing's awful because we're going to be empty nesters in a year.
That's the perfect time to get a dog.
I want a damn dog in the house.
You have a friend.
I don't have any friends.
That's your friend.
Oh, that's why you get the dog to be your friend?
Yeah.
It probably wouldn't be my friend either. You suck, Bernstein. Like
it'd be your best friend.
Put more food in the bowl, Bernstein.
Now I kind of want you to have a dog.
We had a dog. We had a dog forever.
No, I mean a new dog.
I know. Look, this
like
is...
Like a little cute one, too. Like, not even like a big guy. Like a little cute guy.
No. I'm not entertaining this. I'm not doing the if I got a dog, it would be this, or this. All I'm saying is
312-644-6767. Should Dan get a dog?
We are
back after these.
I will take a picture of the dog. There will be a dog living in my house. Wish me luck. And that has been High Noon. How about some football stuff next?
How about a little bit of
quarterback analysis and maybe something that we didn't want to do then and now have to do now?
Yes, we need to go back into some analysis that we didn't think we would be doing again, and we thought we were wrong when we were doing it before, but it turns out that we were right, so should we apply the same standard? Dan and I will discuss all of that and Bears training camp opening up next here on The Score.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.